Welcome to China Manufacturing Decoded from Sofeast, the podcast where we take you through some of the major topics facing importers and manufacturers in China today. Hello, listener. Thanks for joining us for episode 34 of the podcast. This is Adrian from Sofeast, and I'm going to be joined by our CEO, Renaud, in what is the final podcast episode of 2020. So today, we're looking back at 2020 and ahead to 2021 and examining the manufacturing landscape around the world. Specifically, how does this affect China with so many companies from, say, America or other countries as well, choosing to diversify their supply chains away from China, move some operations and component suppliers out of China in order to escape tariffs or indeed to mitigate the types of risk that they faced in early 2020 during the big shutdown of China's manufacturing during the coronavirus pandemic. So is this trend of moving away from China going to continue? And what sort of countries are actually benefiting from this? For example, India and Vietnam. So we'll have a bit of a look at that as well. If you are considering moving some of your supply chain out of China in 2021, this is a great podcast to round out the year with. Let's hear what Renaud had to say. Hi, Renaud. How's it going?
Hey, not bad. How about you?
Yeah, getting all ready for Christmas actually over here. We're recording on the 17th of December, so yeah, got the tree up, got everything ready now, I think.
Good job.
as we come to the end of 2020, I've seen quite a lot of articles, and one of the topics that's been quite popular is the moving of operations either partly or completely out of China to places like Vietnam, India, or other countries in Asia, or even Mexico, I've seen in 2021. And the US-China trade war has been going on for quite some time now. And of course, we've also had the coronavirus pandemic to contend with. So in today's episode, as we close out the year, I wanted to really get your point of view on the state of play when it comes to moving our manufacturing out of China and diversifying it by having operations in other countries as well as China or completely away from China. So is it still a realistic trend that we see a lot of companies moving away from China?
It is a trend to plan for it. It is a trend to research the options, research, you know, what kind of suppliers we can find in other countries in Southeast Asia or South Asia. A lot of our clients have been asking us for these kind of things. So over the past year, we kind of beefed up our presence in Vietnam and India for that. However, you know, once you have a plan, even once you have identified some potential sources, there's a very big gap between what a relatively large company or a very large company can do versus what a relatively small company can do. And big companies, when they decide something, and usually these days it even comes from the board of directors and, you know, thinking of how to mitigate the risk, how to be less involved with China, and they see that as a sort of an existential risk on the company. Once it's decided, they will go ahead, they will move, especially, you know, for the products that they buy in large quantity. When they have a large operation, it's not that difficult for them actually to make the move, because either they work through contract manufacturers, you know, Taiwanese, Koreans often, and these contract manufacturers just tell them, oh, you really want to move over there? Okay, let us just set up a facility. Right. So they make that leap relatively easy for the big company, and they take care of all the logistics, let's say. Mm. And that's how a lot of companies have been moving mostly assembly out of China. Now, for much smaller companies that buy, you know, $100,000 or $1 million or $10 million a year, well, it's much, much harder. Usually they need to rely on an ODM or OEM manufacturer. they don't control everything in their relationship. They have sort of a relatively complex setup, relatively complex agreement with these manufacturers that give some weight to the manufacturer to actually decide, you know, what to do. So it's often in part or wholly the manufacturer's product. So these companies in that case have a very hard time moving to another place. I think I said that before in this podcast, but all these companies, especially the e-commerce companies and all the companies that do private labeling of products, if they go for, I don't know, they're looking for vacuum cleaners, let's say. Well, in China, they go to the Canton Fair or Global Sources or whatnot, and they see some manufacturers that have, you know, 20 different models or 50 different models of vacuum cleaners. And they say, I like this one, do it in this color with this packaging with my brand. Well, how do they transfer that to Vietnam, to Thailand, to India? They have to find also a manufacturer there that has a wide range of products, you know, and that will do the same thing. And that's not really existent there. Not, maybe not yet, but at this point in time, it's not really existent. not to mention that to keep making the same product there, number one, they're not really allowed to do that because it's not their product in the first place. They're just distributing their manufacturer's product. Number two, even if they get around that, they will have to pay maybe for opening the molds to have the same enclosure, you know, the same shape, everything. They will have to have, you know, the whole development of the new product done somewhere in Chennai or in Da Nang or Ho Chi Minh City, or, you know, who's going to finance that? Especially the tooling, but not just the tooling, you know, the whole product. And these days, vacuum cleaners are not very simple products.
There's no
electronics in there. There's, you know, they have a number of functions and things like that. And it's really not easy to move. Now, the companies that have designed and developed their own products are in a better shape here, because they have the engineering files and everything. If they've done a good job of setting up the right agreements, they can move the molds and the various toolings relatively easily outside of their supplier's factory. But it still doesn't mean it's easy, because then they might have to either redesign the whole product with a lot fewer Chinese components in there, or actually keep buying the same components from the same Chinese suppliers. And then what happens is that you still have a good bunch of your supply chain in China, but then you're assembling it in Bangkok. Well, if there's a problem with China, you're still going to feel it. And now you have a supply chain that's more spread out, that's longer, more complex, and more prone to disruptions, actually. So what do you do? I mean, a lot of companies are facing this conundrum, and it's not an easy one. It's not an easy one.
Vietnam, in particular, looking at one of the articles that I was talking about at the start of the episode, which I'll leave a link to in the show notes. Since 2019, the amount of imports going into the USA alone from Vietnam has gone up by around almost 40%. So it must be the case that it is actually now possible to not only have manufacturing done in Vietnam, but also obtain components as well, surely.
The first part of your sentence is correct, but when it comes to the components, it's not that easy. So a lot of American companies said, you know, in 2018, 2019, they said, well, staying in China is too risky. We need to do something outside of it. And maybe we, you know, we start to have 20% made outside of China, and then we let that share go up and up and up. And for a lot of them, the easy choice was Vietnam for many reasons. A lot of Chinese suppliers, actually sometimes they're the same suppliers, have set up another factory you know, close to Hanoi or close to Ho Chi Minh City, and then it's very easy for them to sort of move, but with the same supplier, actually, right? In other cases, it's close to China. It's easy to get the components from, say, from Dongguan to Hanoi. The culture is relatively similar. The ways of doing business may, you know, kind of look like, you know, relatively similar. It's not like going to India, where there's a little bit more of a culture shock. Everything is really, you know, slower, you know, it seems a bit more difficult. Vietnam kind of looks a little bit more like China. So people are used to that.
Yeah.
And they like the similarity. Yeah.
In actual fact, then, the sort of rush to Vietnam or perhaps to other neighboring Asian countries was almost a way to circumvent the tariffs from the USA by having manufacturing done in Vietnam, but even though a lot of the supply chain is still Chinese.
You can say that, yes. A lot of that is really just assembly and packing. In some cases, just the last stages of assembly, you know, they're kind of flirting with the rules here. In some cases, it's downright illegal. There's not sufficient value creation. But, you know, as long as they don't get caught, they just keep doing it most often.
Yeah.
And you're right. Now, in some cases, you know, there have been companies owning manufacturing plants that actually closed them in China and relocated to Vietnam. It's not that many, but there have been some. And they kind of had to go back to the strategy they had in China 20, 25 years ago, which is a lot of vertical integration. Make, you know, okay, we don't just do assembly, testing, packing, whatever. No. Now we also need to do the plastic injection molding, and we need to do the CNC machining, and this and this and that, because the network of suppliers, you know, of component suppliers, is kind of missing in Vietnam. It's not really totally missing, but it's much, much less mature than in China. So to find the right ones that still have the capacity for you and that are at the right quality level, the right price and everything, is much harder in Vietnam than it is in Dongguan or in Ningbo, you know.
And certainly in India, then I would assume.
Yes, same thing. Yes. We've seen a number of contract manufacturers, Taiwanese contract manufacturers in electronics, make the move for Chennai. So Chennai is on the coast, on the east, sort of southeast of India. And there was already some automotive production, so some car production there. So you have, you know, sort of a network of suppliers for metal parts and plastic parts and things like that. And educated workforce, you know, that got trained in that automotive industry. And then you have sort of a boom in electronic industry over there. But still a lot of components come from China. And by the way, that's pretty painful these days, because with the little, I don't know what to call that, the Cold War, really, between India and China, the Indian customs are really not keen on having a lot of imports from China. And what that means is, if you were buying, you know, batteries and touchscreens and PCBAs from suppliers in Shenzhen and shipping them to Chennai in India, well, you know, the custom procedures were, you know, used to be maybe a few days max, and now they might be, you know, 3 weeks, from what I heard, two or 3 weeks. And it might get worse soon. And that shows the risk that is inherent to long and complex supply chains, as I mentioned before, because the longer your supply chain, you know, the more links are, you know, that can be affected and that can break. And here people thought that they were escaping the Chinese risk, but actually they still source from China anyway. So if something wrong, really bad, goes into China and the factories there are unable to make anything, they are affected anyway. Plus, now they have to manage the relationship between China and India, which is an extra risk, right? So now, are they going around the USC tariffs? Yeah, okay, good job, you know, but, you know, do you want to move some key stages of your supply chain and increase your risks just to avoid these tariffs? You know, maybe when you add up all the costs, it doesn't make much difference actually for them in the current situation.
About India as well, I did read that India actually isn't a member of all of the same trading block or groups in Asia as lots of the Asian countries, which means that they actually don't benefit from very, very good tariffs when it does come to bringing in, you know, components and things from other places in Asia, which is another issue, I suppose, when you're dealing with India.
It might. I'm not really sure about that. It never came as a real issue in the cases that we looked at. It might contribute, you know, as a real cost factor, but I didn't see that the cases we worked on actually.
Okay. Now, I've mentioned the US-China trade war, you know, a little bit, and of course that is one of the big drivers of some high-profile companies like Apple moving some operations out of China to places like Vietnam, which they've actually done recently. They're opening a big factory ready to come online in, I think, early 2021 in northern.
Is opening a big factory just about, I don't know, 1 or 2 hours away from the border of China, relatively close to Hanoi. And why is that? You know, there's still plenty of workforce there, even though salaries have been going up a lot for people who used to do some other kinds of jobs and now do operator work or supervisor work in electronic assembly plants. And so a key question here is, where are the components going to come from? And in the short term, I'm pretty sure it's going to come from China mostly, right? At least the ones that were currently sourced in China. Now, Foxconn makes a lot of components, and that's the way they make money. They don't really make money on assembly. So I'm sure they have a plan for moving some of that fabrication of components over to Vietnam and to India and to other places, and to sort of hollow out their operations in China. Well, I don't know. I'm not privy to any details on that deal, so I can't really comment.
As soon as I saw that article, actually, I thought, oh, that's northern Vietnam. It's near the Chinese border. That's got to be because by necessity they're getting components over the border from China. So yeah, it sounds like you're spot on with that. And as I was saying, I've mentioned the US-China trade war. If we continue on that vein a little bit, we need to mention the change in presidency at this point. So do you have any thoughts on how a Biden presidency might actually affect things moving forward?
Well, I was talking about that with a friend recently. And, you know, the fact that Trump was, in a way, you know, you might say innovative, or you might say that he was ruthless, or whatever you might say, what he's done so far is part of the arsenal of the next president. And I don't see Biden just saying, okay, guys, you know, let's just erase that, forget it, you know, let's go back. It would be seen as a sign that he's too soft on China, and that would really not be the kind of message that the US public opinion wants to see at that point in time, from everything I read. So I don't think he's going to go back to the previous situation. Now, is it, you know, the question is more, so the tariffs are probably not going anywhere in the short and maybe also in the midterm. What is he going to work on? Is he going to try to get more concession, more changes from Beijing? Or is it just going to let the Congress do their stuff? I mean, the US Congress has been doing a lot of things against China, actually more, trying to do more things than Trump. Trump kind of followed them, actually, more than he led them in a little war against China. I think Congress is going to keep going, especially against Chinese tech and Chinese sort of influence over the US society and their interests. I'm not sure the trade war is going to be at the forefront. And that's not bad news, for our clients who don't like risks, who don't like things constantly changing with the risk
Sure.
of, boom, 25% tariff. Oh, now we're losing money on everything we sell. This is
Right.
just not something they like to see. I don't think the trade war is going to be at the center of all of this. Things gonna it's gonna focus more on intellectual property rights, protection, and stop hacking into this and that, and stop trying to influence these institutions, and stop, I think that's going to be the focus.
Yes, and I think that spilled over to the UK to an extent as well, because up to now we were going ahead with Huawei infrastructure in the 5G rollout in the UK. And then, surprise, surprise, as we come to Brexit and the government here wants to get a nice trade deal with the US, then we end up kicking out Huawei. And well, I'm not sure who we're going to use. It wouldn't surprise me if it's American technology, but I'm wondering whether that might be perhaps through some sort of light suggestion from the states saying, hey, if you're going to be friends with us, you can't be having Huawei building your infrastructure.
Well, I don't think what US company would be. I mean, I don't want to tease them too much, but they're very, very, very far behind on 5G. So, yes, not just the UK, but think of Australia, think of Canada,
Yeah.
and think also of some other European countries. Who knows?
Yes, it's certainly a strange time. You did mention the trade war perhaps will start to take a bit of a back seat, and there are other things that the states might want to focus on when it comes to maybe combating Chinese influence. What I did read recently, though, was that despite the effects of the trade war pushing down imports from China into the States by quite a large percentage, I think maybe around 20% overall, in 2020, because of the coronavirus pandemic, this has, kind of all disappeared, and it's and the imports from China to the US and of course other places, I'm sure, are now sort of booming, presumably because of all the online shopping people have been doing. So have you seen any of this, any evidence of this?
Well, there's a lot of sectors are benefiting. If you are a Chinese manufacturer of electronic bikes or bikes or gym equipment or kitchenware, or office equipment, your life is good these days. There's a lot more demand than before. And it's not just in China. I mean, we were talking with companies that were trying to have Taiwanese bike manufacturers take on their project. And then the Taiwanese bike manufacturers these days, they say, oh, sorry, we're very, very full. We can't get any new customers, really too full, right? And that's the case with some companies in mainland China also. They are quite full. They're killing it. They're doing a great year. And yes, I mean, look at all the congestion of the ports these days, and all the mess with shipping. It's not only due to a very poor management of where the containers are, and some people also mentioned that some of the ships get scrapped, and things like that. There's also the other part of the equation is demand. There's more demand for a lot of big stuff, I mean, a lot of furniture and gym equipment, and this stuff is big, right? Electronics also are not doing bad. So obviously some sectors are not doing great. Anything around travel, you know, the luggage industry is not doing great. apparel is not really doing great because a lot of people get their the spring season of last year completely, you know, unsold. So they don't have much cash. It's terrible. So they're not buying it. They're going to try to resell the same thing that they were hoping to sell last year. I mean, this current year. So there's a lot of losers and a lot of winners here. Overall, yeah, there's a lot of high volume products that are getting shipped, and there's much less capacity for air freight because a lot of commercial airplanes, you know, they were carrying passengers plus some cargo, are not flying these days. So yes, it's a hit on the supply side of freight, of course. But it might also come from a higher demand for sea shipment of high volume products.
But it seems that, you know, now that we're coming to the end of this, is it fair to say terrible year, that China really is coming out of it as perhaps one of the winners, whereas in the West over here, you know, we continue to struggle along with bad economy, people, you know, still having a lot of trouble with the coronavirus, unfortunately, a lot of uncertainty. And over in China, I guess they'll be thinking, well, do you know what, we've handled this pretty well, and even our economy and manufacturing sector is doing well these days.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of people are kind of unhappy about that. Yes.
Well, yeah, I'm sure they are. I don't think I feel unhappy. I kind of look at it a bit enviously from over here in the UK. But yeah, I totally understand what you mean. I've mentioned the US a lot, but when it comes to other countries as well, do you see them trying to diversify their supply chains out of China? I don't mean countries, I mean companies in those countries, European countries, Australia, wherever. Are they trying to diversify for different reasons than the US? Because of course the US-China trade war is quite specific to the States. But so what other reasons are you seeing for this now?
Well, first, a company might be in Sydney, Australia, but might be selling half of their products in the US, and then the tariffs apply. So the tariffs are actually forcing a lot of companies also outside of the US to rethink their supply chain, obviously, because, you know, if they sell in the US and they're hit with the tariffs, they're going to want to make the product somewhere else, or at least, you know, a part of their product somewhere else. The other reason is everybody was really shocked early this year in February and March. You know, what? My Chinese factory is closed and they don't know when they're going to reopen. Well, a lot of people thought about that and said, we can't keep making that in China alone, you know. And maybe they had one supplier in Xiamen and one supplier in Hangzhou, but it's all China, and certain things impact, you know, all of China. So yeah, they said, we've got to get out of China, maybe not get out, but put one foot outside of China, so that our ability to keep supplying products to our market is not impacted, and that makes a lot of sense. Now, have they moved? You know, as I said at the start of this episode, it's not that easy for a lot of small and mid-sized companies. Some of them definitely can do it. However, when you cannot fly to visit the potential suppliers, you know, are you going to just do Zoom calls and you know, not be able to really visit the factories with your own eyes and feel the people there and observe and get your own opinion? A lot of people have just shelved their plans for now, and they say, well, when I can travel, then this is going to be back on the agenda. Right now, it's on hold. We have a lot of clients like that in this situation.
Right.
And I know a lot of companies in this case, they have projects for moving some of the manufacturing, maybe moving their own factory But you know, things are on hold because it's really not that easy to move around these days. So they've been waiting, and yes, China is benefiting from the status quo. But what's going to happen once all of these travel restrictions are lifted? I you know, if people are really out of cash, you know, I mean, these companies that want to move, they're out of cash, it's kind of tough, and they just get by, you know, because their market is not doing great, then there's not going to be a lot of changes. However, if they're doing good and they have some cash and they can go ahead with these kinds of projects, well, you can expect a lot of things, you know, getting transferred out of China. Yes.
So that's probably going to be in the next sort of 2 or 3 years, then, I suppose.
Right. That's what I would expect. Yes.
And yeah. Okay.
There's one more complicating factor, of course, is do they sell in China? Now, if they sell in China and they want to keep selling more and more in China, they're not going to move all out of China. They're going to always keep some production in China, very probably, because importing, you know, stuff into China and dealing with the Chinese customs and all the delays that it creates and the uncertainty and so on is not fun. It's not fun.
Yes, that's a good point. And also, I suppose, as well, if you are a business who is already selling a lot of your own products into China, do you want to risk the wrath of the Chinese by moving operations out? Would you potentially be penalized like that as well?
Right. There is a risk. This is very, very sensitive. If you have a consumer brand and you show that you are moving your manufacturing outside of China, there might be a backlash. That's correct. Or maybe even the Chinese government might get pissed. Who knows, right? So yes, that's a very sensitive issue for them.
Good points there about moving out of China or perhaps staying in China and looking at places like Vietnam and India, where of course are some key locations for Southeast or indeed elsewhere in 2021. And as we close out this year, this will be the last podcast of 2020, and we'll be taking a little bit of a break for Christmas, and we'll be back with everybody in early January. So until then, Renaud, thanks for joining me.
Well, thanks, Adrian, and thanks to all the listeners. And again, keep us motivated. If you are listening on iTunes or Stitcher or some other similar app, go in there and just give us a 5-star review. That always helps us keep motivated and keep churning these podcasts.
Any comments on topics that you'd like to hear from as well? We'd love Definitely. To hear those, and we can tackle those in 2021 for you too.
In the meantime, let's wish everybody happy holidays.
That's right.
We'll be back in January.
Excellent. Thanks, Renaud. Merry Christmas, and Merry Christmas to all the listeners.
All right. Thanks. Same to you.
Thanks for joining us. If you've enjoyed today's podcast, don't forget to like and share, and you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other places that you get your podcasts from. See you next time.